Welcome to the Mr. TV Podcast, a love letter to television shows of the past. On today's episode, we're speaking with director Tim Hamilton about a commercial you've definitely seen.
Well, people don't see the real me, right? They just see my acne problem. People think that I eat too many chocolate bars or that I don't wash my face. Yeah, I tried many things. I've tried everything, but just nothing works. My brother says I'll probably grow out of it, but I don't think so, no. It's hard to believe now that it will actually go away.
There are solutions. Call for a free informational video on acne.
Tim speaks to us about the creation of this commercial, working with the real person involved, and how the spot changed his career.
Tim Hamilton, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much. Nice to meet you.
Before we get into it, why don't you just tell our listeners a bit about who you are?
I'm a director, a TV and film director. I've been doing it for 33 years, I guess. And my main bread and butter, so to speak, has been television commercials, particularly comedy commercials. Although when I did this commercial in question, I wasn't really doing that yet.
And so the commercial that you mentioned that we're talking about today, could you give me a production rundown of this commercial? So when was it shot? How did you get involved? And what was involved in it?
Sure. Well, typically what happens in the commercial world is that I'm represented by a production company. So they're sort of my agent, but they're also the producers of the commercial. And at that point, the company was called Avion Films. I was fairly new to directing commercials. I started as a music video director and then worked my way into commercials about 4 years later. So because I was kind of what they say, building my reel, I agreed to do it and the company agreed to do it. There was very little money involved for any of us. I don't think I got paid, or if I did, it was my rate, that's for sure.
Oh.
But the beauty of those kinds of jobs is you often get a little more creative control. And obviously I was doing it just because I thought, well, this could be an interesting commercial and it could be something good
for
my reel. Yeah.
So were you behind the sort of direct-to-camera direction that the commercial decided to go with?
That's right. Well, as is typical, I got a script, and it was basically the script of this guy who was a real person sort of saying stuff to camera. And the creative director said, you know, we want it to feel very authentic as opposed to, you know, acne commercials and things like that, typical acne commercials, which I totally agreed with. And it was my idea to take it more in a documentary direction than I think he had intended, if I recall correctly. My whole point was, you know, for this to work, I think it has to be as absolutely authentic as we can make it. Mm-hmm. Because this was a real guy and we were telling his story, and I thought, in order to feel valid and not to feel like some phony contrived thing, I want him to speak in his own words. Mm-hmm. So I was sort of puzzling how to do this, because direct to camera work, when anyone, including good actors, is just looking down the lens, as I'm doing now, but to just look at a glass and metal object and try to talk about yourself is difficult for a very good actor. And I was puzzling about how to do this. And I had said to him, you know, how about speaking to an interviewer off camera, namely me? And he said, well, I really want it to be down the lens. So then I realized Errol Morris, a famous documentarian, he does this all the time where he has people looking right down the lens. And what he did was he invented this little system, which he called the Interotron, which is sort of like a teleprompter, but instead of seeing words in the teleprompter, you see his face, and he would be sitting in another room. So I thought, okay, well, and at the time, he was the only one who had this equipment. Now you can actually rent it if you want. But at the time, it was very unusual. And so I approached the director of photography, a man named George Morita. George is an amazing scientific mind. And right. Very quickly, and we had no money, I said, well, George, you know, can you think of a way to do this that doesn't involve us trying to create a rig or something like that? Because they just had no money. And he did very quickly just figured it out, which was to use a piece of one-way mirror basically on an angle. So and I would sit 90 degrees angle to the camera lens and he would see my face instead of the lens. And sometimes with very seasoned, even famous actors, we'll say, well, this seems kind of ridiculous. I don't need to do this. And I'll say, well, it's not the same, you know, because we have a relationship and acting is reacting. And in this case, of course, being a non-actor in particular, it was all just about putting him at his ease and allowing him to be himself and be truthful.
Where and when was everything shot? Like when, what was the timeline for its creation?
You know, it's a long time ago and I've all those files are lost in a computer crash. But I would say that typically these things are over a period of maybe 2 or 3 weeks from getting the job to finishing editing. We shot it all in one day. We shot it at his house. That was, I believe, something I insisted on as well. I didn't want to go to some phony room and dress it like, hey, it's a teenager's room. I just wanted to go in his room, which again was unusual at the time. And I think, you know, commercials are all about controlling every single aspect, even more than a feature film, I would say, you know, every detail is analyzed to the nth degree. In this case, I think because we were doing it and buying the spot, he went along with that. So that was unusual. But I also loved that. To me, it was great. And I really, in working with George, well, I could tell you many things about it. He's really an amazing guy. But he worked very hard to make it not look like a commercial, which is what I wanted. You know, people say, oh, yeah. But you still want it to look, you know, really beautiful and still really slim. No, I don't. I want it to look like I walked in there with a documentary crew and do it that way. That's what I wanted to do.
And just one note I'd say is that there was a Playback Online magazine. I think I sent you a link to that. Mm-hmm. And it did say in there that you said that his own room was actually ruled out and that you used a University of Toronto dorm room instead.
Oh, is that right?
And you kind of like constructed it to kind of have his interests on the walls and stuff. So it did look like it was his space. So I just want to make sure
that's hilarious because I totally do not remember that. So I'm remembering my intention more than what I was
like. Right. Yeah. Gotcha.
Because I remember sitting in the room with him and I also think we shot some stuff outside, some B-roll stuff. That's crazy.
Maybe you just made the room so much like him that in your memory, it's just like, that's his room. So,
yeah, because maybe it was that I visited his house. That's maybe what it was too. I think I did. I think I visited him at his apartment. That's crazy. Anyway.
Yeah. So in this commercial, we've spoken about the non-actor who's involved in it. How did you meet him? How well did you get to know him? What did you learn about him before you shot the commercial?
You know, not a ton, but I did meet him. And again, I wanted to meet him beforehand to build some familiarity and so on. He was a really nice young guy. You could say he's not an actor by any means. He had no ambitions to be an actor. I'm not really sure how the company somehow found this guy. So maybe, I don't know. I mean, maybe they put something out to find him. I can't remember why, but I'm sure there were a number of candidates out of which he was chosen. So yeah, I met him, as I said, probably at his apartment and we just talked about stuff. And really, as I would with any performer or anyone on camera, I just try to build some rapport and put these so that, I really did also want to be true to him, and sounds kind of silly maybe, but I, you know, you don't want to betray someone's trust who's putting themselves in what could be an awkward position. And, you know, actually I went to the YouTube thing and I thought, oh, so people were, he did probably receive some mockery after the commercial, which is kind of sad to me because I really worked to try to not do that. But no, he was a very nice fellow, but, and I believe fairly recent immigrant. So I love that too, you know, that it was to hear people with accents that weren't typically Canadian was very unusual back then.
And, yeah, it was different.
Hard to get through. And the reason being ostensibly just, you know, oh, we want people to really understand every word they're saying. And so it was like, well, this is our population, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, that's something that, of course, is being addressed much more these days. But
yeah. And when it came to his story about his acne, when you shot with him, none of that was makeup, right? Like, that was all just his actual acne that he was, that he had.
That's right. And that was his, how he looked. And he was in the middle of treatments, I think, at that time. There's one shot at the end of the version you have, which is not actually the original version of that commercial, by the way. It's kind of a bowdlerized version, I would say, if you remember. But there were more shots of him just doing things around his room, and also some titles that I designed that were very, very different than those kind of ugly things that are on there now.
Do you know anyone who has access to those original files?
I might have them in the basement, in my basement. I'd have to really dig through some stuff. I was looking online because I thought, oh, I really want to find the original, because that also was important to me. The titles, I was allowed to actually design the titles, and I did them physically using a technique with photo paper and objects on photo paper that were then animated. And it was sort of a technique that the surrealist photographer Man Ray used to do. And for some reason I thought, oh, I think this will fit nicely. And it adds sort of a serious tone to it. And again, I think they just, with the very atypical to ever let a director handle the titles. It's really the art director's job. In this case, I believe there was really only one creative guy. And so again, he was trusting and just said, yeah, sure, go for it. And then I think they probably replaced it. First of all, to show that scene at the end where he'd completely gone through this treatment. And
he walks out, yeah.
And then also to, just because they're, you know, they think like account people, which is just give the message right and up front and da da da. Da.
Yeah.
But I think it was a mistake on their part, but that's.
So the original spot was like a bit longer. There's more titles to it in it. And so it's different than what we typically saw, or what we saw on television, is what you're saying.
Well, the first one did air. It aired for years, like at least a year or two. I was surprised when I saw the new version, but that was, I think, a few years later or something when they changed it. So no, it definitely aired that way. It was a subtler commercial.
Right. Did you ever hear what he thought about the commercial too?
I don't believe that I ever did hear about it. I never saw him after that, no. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I saw it a lot on TV. I mean, and obviously as a director, it's like, oh, fun. There's my, you know, there's the spot I directed. I was very happy that it got as much attention as it got. And it got some positive attention and some negative attention. It was, I think it sort of skirted the line on legality of drug advertising. You'll notice so much drug advertising. It's sort of like Lemon. And it's like, what? I have no idea what they're about. But this one, it was pretty clearly what it was about, but they didn't put the company name on it. They just said, call your doctor or call this information line or something like that. So they somehow, and I remember there was a piece in the Star or the Globe or something about that as well. But yeah, and it ended up getting me more work for sure.
Yeah, I was gonna say, in our emails back and forth, you said it was sort of an important commercial to you. I wonder why that was.
I had been already doing, instead of just having actors say the lines, responding to questions, I'd been using that technique for a while, and I'd really been trying to work on my work with actors. And so, but I was happy that it all sort of came together. You know, as you probably know, when you're working on a project, I always like to have sort of a set of rules that apply to that project and maybe very specific to that project. And they were, in this case, you know, to be as authentic as possible, mm-hmm. to allow him to be himself as much as possible and so on. So I was very happy with that side of it. I was a bit disenchanted with things that were very styly by that point. I'd been a music video director and I'd had some success with that. And I enjoy that. It's not that I don't enjoy it, but around that time too, stuff like the Dogma film movement was happening, Lars von Trier and people like that, doing things without lighting, without anything, you know, without propping even. And I thought there was something really strong about that. And to try to bring some of those ideas into commercials, what I thought was a fresh idea. So I, you know, although my stuff isn't tend to be as documentary as that, although I've done documentary stuff since then, I do like always having a sense of authenticity, particularly in regards to performances, but also in terms of camera as well. So that was important for me. And it was just one of those spots, you know, like five or six times in my career, there have been things that's like, oh, this takes you to the next level. And all of a sudden people treat you differently. And then
right,
you move on. And that's sort of how it works. So I was very lucky to have that spot, that opportunity.
And before, we talked a little bit about sort of the YouTube comments that you had seen. And there is, I would say, a little bit of mockery of the commercial, specifically the way he says chocolate bars. Like, that's something that kids at the time, when I was in middle school, back in like the early 2000s, people would just say it that way. But I would say equally, there are a lot of people who remember the commercial very fondly. There are people who think that this is an iconic piece of Canadian media. And I think also people in middle school at the time too, we're all suffering with acne and we know how tough it is. And we know how,
I get where that comes from. I was a teenager too, so I know what that's like, and the discomfort with the subject, and the fact that he did have a very specific way of speaking. I love that, you know, and to me, but I remember too, that the way he says that, it's like that sticks in my mind, the way he says chocolate bars. But again, if it had been sort of written and he was just reading it, there would have been a thing, well, can you say chocolate bars differently? Chocolate, you know, they would try to get me to get him to be a parrot to me or something. And I hated that idea. And they didn't push me into that, to their credit. Because I have had other instances where they did do that. You know, someone's like, well, the accent is really driving me crazy. And then, why do you care? Like, I don't know. But anyway, so I'm glad to hear that there's also affection for it. There certainly was at the time, and I got very nice comments about it and so on. And so I was pleased about that.
Yeah, I think it's the documentary style authenticity really comes through, as we've talked about with the commercial. And I think that's what people really remember and love about it. Also because we saw it like a million times on TV, I think. So we all kind of have this, you know, collective memory of this commercial. So any final thoughts you want to share about the commercial before I let you go?
Yeah, I also want to talk about some of the other people involved. There's, as I said, Paolo Lazzari, who was the executive producer, was instrumental in me getting the job. I can't remember who the line producer was, but probably a woman named Jen Bass. And the editor was a man named Brian Noon. So, you know, because it's a team effort. And then, you know, George was a huge, you know, mentor to me too. So that, it was also important for that reason. I didn't really bring that up, but, you know, working with him was kind of a special thing. He was also one of the owners of the company I worked for, actually. So he probably did it for free even, you know, but he was that kind of a guy.
Well, with that, Tim Hamilton, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Matthew. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the show. If you like what you heard, share this episode over the social media airwaves or leave a review. Stay tuned for more. You might be wondering, did I find the guy in the commercial? I am 95% certain that I did. I reached out, but did not hear back, so I redacted some personal information from the episode to protect his right to privacy. From what I can tell, he appears to be doing well. That's all I've got.